Thanks for all coming, and if we could begin the tape, please. I'm Marvin Landsberg, and you are here. This is the first in a series of sessions this week on mythology and religion, and the title of the series is Myth, Creation, and the Hero's Quest, I think. I forgot to write down what I put up. That's it, more or less. And what I'd like to do this week is explore a number of things related to some of Joseph Campbell's approaches to mythology, looking at hero quests, their relationship to religions, and Campbell's assertions that that's really at the center of what religion is all about. And then look at, later this week, some feminist critiques of Campbell. The title of today's session in particular is The Hero with a Thousand Faces in Myth and Religion. Later on Wednesday, I'll be doing one, Do Heroes Always Have to Shave? on feminism and myth. And then third and fourth session are entitled In Who's God's Image? One's on comparative creation stories, and another is on Who's God's Image, Men's or Women's? A couple introductory comments. I saw some members of the Vegetarian Liberation Front, I think, in the village earlier today. I'm a little bit concerned talking about Joseph Campbell, who's a known meat eater. So I hope we don't get raided by them. In fact, he was known to have involved some text reconstruction, biblical texts, and there's a quote in last night's liturgy, which he'd done some research on, to show that this has sort of been corrupted in its transmission. And that's the, I don't know if you remember this from last night's liturgy, but it was, see if I can read it. This is a question. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of her hand and marked off the heavens with a span? Campbell, in his research, said that the original version of that was, who had measured the waters in the hollow of her hand and marked off the heavens with span? So, anyway, I hope we'll remain safe. The title of today's session, The Hero with a Thousand Faces in Myth and Religion, that might be redundant to say in myth and religion. I could have just titled it in myth or The Hero with a Thousand Faces in Religion. I put them both because it depends on your point of view, whether that's redundant or not. And that's partly what I'd like to explore, the connections between myth and religion and points of view on that. And myth is one of those words that deserves extra pay for the amount of work that it does. It gets used a lot in a lot of different contexts and in a lot of different ways. And it's notoriously difficult to define what myth is. Everyone who talks about myth, everyone who writes about myth, has a little bit different idea in mind, and sometimes radically different ideas in mind. So it's one of those words also that keeps English professors in business, arguing over definitions, let alone ever getting to the mythology. You can argue for weeks over the definition and be happy. I don't think doing that here will make us happy, so we'll get beyond those arguments, although I'd like to address those because they are important. I think the simplest definition of myth, or the simplest series of definitions of myth, really are the most profound. And just, I think it helps to remember, and I'm sure everybody here does, that Greek mythos is simply story. And that's what it is. Myth is story. And you'll hear myth defined as, myth deals with truths that are so large that they can't be dealt with in any other way except in story. So they deal with the big question. Myth deals with the big question. Who are we? Who's God? Why are we here? And I tell this to my students in my mythology class that studying mythology, it's philosophy without fear. Or it's theology without threat, so that they'll stick around, and, or at least it's theology without German. So. I think more important even than trying to get that definitions of what myth is, really the best way to think about myth is how does it function? Functional definitions. And there are two fundamentally different ways to think about mythology. And I'm sure those two ways are represented here, at least I would guess they are. And I'll just quickly lay these out. Right? One is approaching myth as the way we were. I call it the Barbra Streisand approach. The other approach is thinking about myth as the way we are. If you want a name to associate that, with that approach, Joseph Campbell thinks about myth as the way we are. Other mythologists as well, maybe less well-known, like Eliade and others. But very briefly, those who think about myth, these are both valid, I think, ways to think about mythology. Myth is the way we were. That's really the scientific viewpoint. And there's a number of jump-off points you can start with. I think Plato is probably most useful, although you could talk about some other Greek thinkers too. But Plato's classic distinction between logos and mythos. There's truth and there's myth. Myth is false and there's truth. Philosophy will get you to truth. Poetry, the arts, deal with things that are false. So Plato wants to kick them out of the Republic because they're dangerous. And that distinction, I think, really dominates the way Western thought thinks about mythology. Myth, and we use that definition of myth all the time, that's a myth. People say, that's a myth, meaning that's false. That's something that's not true. Along that lines of thinking about mythology, then, if you use the way we were approached to myth, myth tends to be viewed as primitive science. That's the way primitive people thought. It's the way children think. But now that we're mature, that we're grown up, that our cultures have matured, and that we've got science, you don't need to explain thunder as God bowling. We know that's not what it is. And so people who still think that, we would wonder about. And cultures would still believe that. We would sort of label primitive. And so in this view, we've outgrown it. Western society's outgrown it as it's become more scientific and looking at things. And the way religion then fits into this really can come out in two different ways. You can either, from sort of a scientific point of view, say religion, myth, same thing, all superstitious mumbo-jumbo, let's leave it alone. Or you've got plenty of scientists that are religious that would perhaps separate mythology from religion and say they're two different things. There's primitive stuff, which is myth, then there's the developed, organized religions, major religions, which are something different. So that's briefly sort of the way we were approached to mythology, and you can mark how well this matches your own ways of thinking. The way we are approached to myth says that even though science dominates our worldview and tends to encroach on mythological thinking, that myth still is a fundamental way of that human beings think, and therefore can only be the way we are. You can never outgrow it, because it's a symbolic way of thought. And that's how it gets defined by Campbell and others, as from this way we are approached. And that in spite of many attempts to outgrow it, repress it, keep it down, it will continue to pop up in many different forms and many different ways, because being human is to think mythologically and symbolically and in mythic symbols. And this point of view tends most often to think about myth and religion as coterminous, very, very similar things. So it's a brief rundown on two general ways of thinking about mythology. How many people here would say you tend to think about myth as the way we are, as I just outlined, along with Campbell and others? How many would think about myth as the way we were? Okay, so sun. Well, that's, we can get some debate going. And any questions about that? What I'd like to, sort of my agenda today is to do some introduction then of Campbell, watch a little bit of Campbell's PBS series, and then do a little bit more explanation behind what they don't get time to outline on there, and save some time for discussion. We'll see if we have time for all that today. I know we don't, but we'll make an attempt. My approach to mythology, I think, is influenced by it from a number of perspectives, but I certainly put myself in the way we are camp. And I mean, I agree that myth and religion really are very similar things, and I tend not to make distinctions between the two when I talk about it. And I think mythologists in general, when you study mythology, you sort of one attitude in mind is you study mythology, what sort of mythologists are studying are stories as, not as divine revelation, but as products of human culture. And products of human culture in wrestling with questions about the divine, but studying them not as revelations, so I think that's one reason you get perhaps away from theology, but studying them as products of certain cultures. And I think one definition, again, of mythology that helps me think about myth, that I always have foremost in my mind, is a structuralist definition of myth. And it's just it's a series of phrases, really. And you can translate the structuralist definition of myth into theological terms very readily. But people like Claude Lévi-Strauss and others say that we create myth and myth creates us. And it's both. Or another way of saying that, specific cultures create myth, stories. Those stories also create us. Or another way of saying myth is a product of a culture. It also produces the culture. And you can't separate the two. It's both and. In fact, you can't even say which was first. And the way I phrase those perhaps biases is say we create myth, myth creates us. You can say myth creates us, we create myth. It's both, and you can't separate the two. And I think just that definition helps me, and that's one way of thinking about perhaps the theme of Holden's summer program, that we are created in the image of God. God created us. One way of thinking about that is what we're saying is, we create myth, myth creates us. We create God, God creates us. That mystery, that combination is part of what mythology is exploring. And for any of those of you who were here last week when we were talking about Blake, I mean, certainly that's Blake's attitude. It's in that mystery of both. Blake creates his gods and believes that he does, but those gods also create him, and that the process didn't just happen once in the past, but it's always ongoing. And I think that's the way Campbell certainly thinks about mythology. A few people know that Campbell was actually up around Holden Village once, and he was coming up here to do some photography of the bears. You know, the bears have been running, maybe it's the same one, I don't know. But he was running around up on the tailings and not following the ranger's advice, and going after this bear, and he wanted to get close. He didn't have a very good lens on his camera, so he got real close, and they faced each other, and he tried to take this picture, and this camera didn't even work, and then the bear got jumpy and started out after him. And so Campbell threw his camera up in the air and started running as fast as he could towards the edge of the tailings. You believe this? And got to the edge, and there's nowhere to go, and he could hear this bear coming, so he got down on his knees and he prayed. And he prayed, "Oh great spirit within, without, please help that bear to follow some other bliss." And he could still hear the bear coming, so he said, "Please help that bear get religion." And he listened, and the bear said, "Stop." And he turned around, and the bear was on its knees praying too. He says, "My gosh, it works." And he listened to take some notes for his next book, and he listened to what this bear was saying. This bear was praying, O great bear spirit in the sky, for that which I'm about to receive, let me be eternally grateful. If you believe that, I think we better go back and talk about the definitions of myth, logos, and myth. Anyway, Joseph Campbell, as everybody knows here now, he's a pop phenomenon in this country. And I think just the phenomenon itself is fascinating. He's really filling a need. And since that Bill Moyers, Joseph Campbell PBS series, I point it there because that's where I'm going to be showing it. he's just a cultural phenomenon, and I think that fascinates me, what he's doing. And he's been criticized and praised from a lot of different circles for that. Lots of praise, certainly. And I'd like to see what type of circles we've got here. And I know a lot of you have watched those. How many people have watched that video series here? Just quite a few of you. And so, done a lot of thinking about that, and I'm going to rely on you. I'm not going to, this week, just lecture and hold forth, really. Today, you might get a little less time to talk than in the rest of this, but I'd really like to make this discussion base. But a couple things I'd say in introduction to Campbell. He's a comparative mythologist. What he's interested in doing is comparing mythologies from different cultures. And his interest isn't in seeing differences. He wants to find the similarities. That's his whole orientation. And he wants to find the similarities between different cultures, myths/religions, and get to the roots of what is at the source of religious mythic expression. And in his view, those things you can find and identify and say they are the same across culture, around the world, through history. And you can identify and talk about those basic patterns in a lot of different ways. Carl Jung would talk about that in psychological terms and talk about archetypes. And Campbell's heavily influenced by Jung. But Campbell's way of talking about sort of those roots, what connects myths.
Excuse me, can you spell that?
Which?
Jung.
Jung, yeah.
J-U-N-G.
Yeah, Carl.
J-U-N-G.
Disciple of Freud, depth psychologist. Campbell's primary way of talking about myth and sort of these things that connect spiritual expressions isn't to go to psychological language, but it's to talk about heroes. And the hero formula, you'll hear it referred to, or sometimes the monomyth. M-O-N-O-M-Y-T-H. And that's his hero with 1,000 faces, which he talks about in his video series, and it was his first book and his most famous and I think influential book. So the hero story is at the center of all mythic expression, religion and myth, and you can identify certain elements in the hero story that are the same cross cultures. And that's really, so what Cam wants to do is identify what those patterns are and the elements of those stories and say, look, this gives you tools to analyze any myth you come across. You can see how it fits into this pattern. And then that gives him sort of a position to interpret the meaning of the story once you identify these structures. So whether you're reading the Odyssey or gospel stories about Jesus, the message for Campbell is the same thing. The message is always the same. And of course, there's individual cultural differences, but the symbolic message for Campbell, whether you're reading about Jesus, Buddha, Odysseus, Perseus, name a hero, same message. And that's one of the questions I want to get to fairly soon, is whether we all agree with that, whether the message does seem to be the same. I was going to make the title of this session Theodicy Through the Odyssey, but my best critic...
Did you say that again?
Yes. Theodicy Through the Odyssey. As my best critic, my wife, said no. And I think it was probably good advice. A couple of quick comments about Campbell. The way he approaches myth is that there's 4 functions of myth. If you look at any mythology, any religion, there's 4 basic functions. And those functions read this when I get it up there? Is that readable or not? I'll try the left. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, four functions. One is the mystical. Two, the cosmological. Three, sociological. Four, pedagogical. Quickie definitions. Again, this is a functional definition of myth rather than some essentialist definition. And sometimes Campbell will give that, he'll say there's four functions of myth, and he'll say mystical, cosmological, sociological, psychological. And in other places, say these are the four. And actually, mystical and psychological overlap. I think this is the maddening thing about reading Campbell. It changes as you read, and it never quite seems as scientific or as precise and as analytic as you'd want it, so he always slips away from you when you try to grasp. But anyway, that's the one, the four functions, I think. If you recognize it, mystical, I'd write slash psychological. That he's getting at. The mystical function of myth, his definition of that is, or explanation, that myth reconciles your consciousness with the preconditions of its own existence. And you say, aha, I get it. You can leave now. You understand. I don't think that's extremely helpful. So, and since we're going to get back to mystical in a minute, that's really what we're focusing on today. That's really the radical function of myth, though. That's the function of myth that's at the heart of, I think, a lot of the gospel messages. That's giving you messages that are against worldly wisdom. The cosmological function of myth, simply myth gives you a picture of the cosmos, the world, that is acceptable to the science of the time. The sociological function, that's the conservative function of myth. Myth tells you who you are in any social setting. So part of what myths do is say who we are and who we aren't. Who we are, us good guys over here, who those bad guys are over there that do things weird, they have weird religious practices, and you can't intermarry with the Canaanites because they do all these freaky things. And that's sort of the conservative function of myth, which is, again, necessary. I mean, if you're Blake, contraries are necessary to human existence. You need both functions. And then the last, pedagogical, myth teaches you about the other four, but it teaches you how to live a human life in any circumstance. Now the mystical function is the one Campbell really is most interested in, and that's the one at the heart of his talk about heroes. And actually all four of those overlap in all kinds of different ways. They really are, they're all overlapping circles. But another way, you know what mystical means, there's one way just to think about sort of the mystical function of myth, and especially the way Campbell approaches that. Mystics tend to do what science doesn't. Science has to separate the function, you from the world. There's me, the observer, there's the observed world, and separate the two. And mysticism unites the two. And really that's what religion and myth is up to, uniting the material and the spiritual and exploring what that radical union means. And that's what mystics, like Blake, walks around and he sees angels singing in a tree. That's a sort of this radical union of material and spiritual. Or the radical exploration of the union of the body and the soul. I use Christian terms. Or the union of human and God. So think Jesus is a perfect mythical figure, the radical union of all God, all spirit, and what that means. And that's sort of this mystical union, that sort of the mythical function of myth explores what those connections really are. And theology will take apart sort of how far the different boundaries of that union are going to be. Myth isn't terribly interested in exploring, sort of systematizing the details of that radical union, it's just expressing it. And different cultures will have different expressions of that radical union. So the hero formula, or the monomyth then, is, according to Campbell, the chief human way of exploring that union, the mystical union of God and us. And with that as introduction, if you could turn over that way, let me turn on the video and show, let's see, about 20 minutes of it to see Campbell talking. I think Campbell's fun to watch, because even for those of you who've seen this before, he's a good storyteller. And then leave enough time for us to get back together and do a little bit of talking. I was going to start this at the very beginning of my talk, because there's a rockets going off and explosions. And I always like to, there's this fantasy whenever I begin a lecture, I can hear these explosions. But I forgot.
It's a myth.
Yeah, I know. Tell me if this is too loud. Seen it before, you're welcome too, but that's it.
Can we get the lights down, please?
Yeah, where's the lights? Before we run out the door today, we've got some more time left. Any comments, reactions, thoughts, ideas about that? It's a nice general question, but let's start there, yeah.
I wanted to ask, it never occurred to me before, I've seen some of those too, about it being a mythical kind of concept or symbolic. When we talk about taking the blood, the bread, mm-hmm. the bread and the wine as symbolic of the body and blood of mm-hmm. Christ, would you think that's sort of like what they were talking about with slaying the dragon yeah. and consuming the blood or taking on the powers of that beast or whatever it is that they conquered?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what Campbell would say. Communion rituals. The message of communion and rituals in all across cultures are, it's that you eat the body of the other, the sacred other you eat. And by eating that, you're making the material and the spiritual combine. And that's the dragon story, that's Christian communion, same thing, and a number of other sort of Campbell's and sort of horrific examples of that. I mentioned a text study last week, but I think that's exactly right.
The thing that struck me was how...
Excuse me, could the person that's talking, could you raise your hand so we can identify you for the demo? Thank you.
The thing I was thinking about the Star Wars passage is that's an analytical thing that Lucas did. He made a synthesis of a bunch of other myths, mm-hmm. and I think that's similar to what Campbell's doing. He's making comparison and synthesis, whereas a myth, by its nature is not understood, and I think in that some way that's limiting point of Campbell's analysis is that you can't, the point of the myth is you can't answer the question, you have to go through the heroic thing.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like a limitation to his form.
Yeah, and I think, in a sense, Campbell probably agrees. He says, here's the form. The form doesn't explain the meaning. It gives you the structure of the way the story is told.
Yeah, I mean, that was criticism in the last bit about Darth Vader, is that he's gone over completely to the intellectual, right. And that's the black and extreme, the false one. But in the same criticism could be made of Campbell, that his method is heavily intellectualized.
Yeah, and that's a couple of questions I'd like to get to tomorrow too, when we've got more time, or Wednesday, I guess it is. Does the monomyth, this notion of departure, adventure, return, which Campbell says is at the heart of all mythology and religion, does that adequately account for religious expression? Is that what connects everything? And another, is it helpful to think of it in those terms? What are the consequences of thinking about all religion in terms of hero formulas? And again, I think this is your question, is it enough? Is that enough, or are there other things you need to bring in? And especially, I think one thing that interests me is, and we'll talk about it on Wednesday, do heroes always have to shave? When you hear Campbell talking about heroes, he's talking about male heroes here, and he talks about mothers, but he doesn't talk very much about them. And is that just editing of this, or is there something more serious involved? I think those are other important questions.
I have a question also about the origin of myth and the manipulation power of the person that originates it, which I feel like could possibly be a reason why we have more male heroes. Mm-hmm. And I think of the phrase used, religion is the opiate of the masses. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if Campbell would think that mythology is also an opiate of the masses. I'm just wondering the origin, who originates the myth.
Yeah. I guess one response that Marx's approach to myth and religion was a way we were approach. myth is falsehood, it is used to dupe people. And Campbell would say it is the way we are, and again, sort of that gets at the sociological function of myth, away from the mystical function. Myth tells you who you are in a social scheme, and certainly the powers that be will take advantage and use those myths to their benefit. And so those power relations, certainly if a mythology reflects its culture, if it's a patriarchal culture, you'll have male myths.
Yeah. It would seem that it's like circles that overlap. I mean, you can't separate those things out completely. But to say to separate totally the mystical from the sociological,
right? Yeah, you can't. They do overlap. That's one thing that I just noticed when I watched this, and you watch the Campbell tapes, is they're talking about all this stuff. Okay, here's the monomyth, but they never really explain what is the mon. What is it exactly when they're talking about it? And then they're all like, oh, that's mythological. And it seems like you could say, oh, that's mythological about anything, and start talking about it. But I think the system that Campbell's got in mind, which I don't have time to outline the details today, we'll start with that on Wednesday. The monomyth that he talks about in The Hero with a Thousand Faces has some specific elements. And he talks about those elements here in the tape. Three stages. There's departure, adventure, return. Then in each of those three stages, there are certain elements and options, like a computer program. You have different options and different loops you can go through. And that's what I'd like to look at, is some of the details of that, and apply that then to some Greek stories, some Hebrew stories, and then others, and from popular culture too, on Wednesday. To look then at stories, not just sort of the ideas behind it, but I want to get at stories, because that's where things, I think, really get interesting. Yeah?
Marvin, would you think that since in these three or four great religions, they have such similarities, including their disciples and all that, do you suppose that all these great religions are the creation of the God, then, or God? Is
that a response? Yeah.
I'll respond to that. He left out one of the great religions. Anyways, that we can talk about, very different. I mean, you don't get a single.
Yeah.
Miracle.
And he does talk about that.
So it all tied in together is my point. Just
only
a different.
Only if you simplify it, so it does.
A different culture stating the same creation story in the language and the symbols that they know and understand.
Yeah, and that notion of simplification, if you get to any level of abstraction, lots of things will start looking the same. And that's one of the questions, or the criticism of Campbell. Is he too far up the scale of abstraction to be helpful? And students that come and say, you know, I took out my garbage this morning. Did I have a hero quest? No. I departed my house. I went outside my fence into the alley, and there's dangers. There's dogs out there, and it stinks. I put my garbage in the can, and then I return. And is that a hero quest?
Yes.
Oh, then. But and I don't think that's even a... I think the answer to that is it depends on how you think of it. You could turn that into a story that has meaning that's very profound. You could trivialize it, and yet in that story, just the fact that you can find hero quest anywhere, I don't think is a necessary criticism of Campbell's approach. I mean, that's part of his very point. This formula is so fundamental to human thought, you can find it everywhere, because it is everywhere, because it's here. And the fact that you can see it in the garbage, I mean, that's there. That's the point. I think we're at closing, so we'll officially end. If anybody wants to sit around and talk anymore, I'd be happy to. So thank you for coming.